Adi Leela, chapter 15, text 1 to 5. So I'll just read the first five, and then we can do the fifth one together, if that's okay. Chapter 15. A synopsis of the fifteenth chapter is as follows. The Lord took lessons in grammar from Ganga Das Pandit and became very expert in commentating upon grammar. He forbade his mother to take grains on the Ekadashi day. He narrated a story that Vishwaroop, after accepting the sannyas order, invited him in a dream to accept sannyas also. But the Lord refused and was therefore sent back home. When Jagannath Mishra passed away, the Lord married the daughter of Vallabha Acharya, whose name was Lakshmi. All these events are summarized in this chapter. Text 1. Translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, because simply by offering a flower at his lotus feet, even the most ardent materialist becomes a devotee. Text 2. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. All glories to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu, all glories to Advaita Acharya, and all glories to the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Paganda Lilara Sutra Kariya Gangana Paganda Vasyasya Prabhura Mukya Adhyayana. Now let me enumerate the activities of the Lord between the ages of 5 and 10. His chief occupation during this period was to engage himself in study. Paganda Lila Chaitanya Krishna Syati Suvistrita Vidyaramba Mukha Pani Ganta Yantara Manohara. The pastimes of the Lord during his Paganda age are very extensive. His education was his chief occupation, and after that was his very beautiful marriage, that his very beautiful marriage took place. Gangadasa Pandit Stane Padareva Karana Shravana Mantra Kante Kila Sutra Vrita Gana. When the Lord was studying grammar at the place of Gangadas Pandit, he would immediately learn grammatical rules and definitions by heart, simply by hearing them once. Purport. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the Lord was given lessons by a teacher named Vishnu and another teacher named Sudarsan. Later on, when he was a little grown up, he was under the care of Gangadas Pandit, who taught him grammar of a higher standard. Anyone serious about studying the Sanskrit language should first learn grammar. It is said that simply to finish studying grammar, Sanskrit grammar, takes at least 12 years. But once one learns the grammatical rules and regulations very nicely, all other scriptures or subject matters in Sanskrit are extremely easy to understand, for Sanskrit grammar is a gateway to education. Gyana timarandasya gyanantina shalakaya chakshu militanjena tasmai shi gurave namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So I'm not going to give a class on Sanskrit grammar. But grammar is the study of the structure of a language. So it's said that when you learn the Sanskrit grammar, then you can read any Sanskrit. So similarly, the Vedic concept of musical, like for instance playing the sitar, people learn the scales for years and years and years, and then they're allowed just to play freely because they know the rules and the scales and the music. So similarly with our Krishna consciousness, if we can understand the philosophy nicely of this Krishna consciousness, Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, and our philosophy, then I have to sit up right now. Then automatically our understanding of Krishna consciousness and how to act in Krishna consciousness becomes an automatic activity. So the Vedas are a study of our existence, why we're here, what the purpose of life is, who are we? So we all had these questions before we came to Christian consciousness. And so many people, probably some people here were born into Christian consciousness, but many of us weren't. And we had these questions, who are we? What's the purpose of life? Why are we here? So these questions, at least for myself, haunted us as children. And we wondered, you know, why we're here. I remember looking into the sky and thinking, there's so many stars, so many planets. Is this the only place where there's life? Surely there must be some life in other places. And I remember thinking that maybe two-thirds or at least half the planet believe in some higher being. They have some innate understanding that there must be something behind this universe, behind this existence. So the Vedic knowledge is like that. You know, we buy a nice new car and there's a handbook that gives us some direction about how to use, which knob means what happens when on the dashboard, when this light flashes. Have you ever had that experience? I have a few times. The light flashes on your dashboard and you think, it's flashing, there's something wrong, but what does it mean, you know? So then you have to go searching. Of course, nowadays you don't search in your handbook, you go and Google it and see, you know, such and such car flashing here. What's the cause of this? So the Vedas are a handbook to how to live in the material world. And of course, Srila Prabhupada has taken the Vedic knowledge and has put the essence. And it's described that Bhagavatam is the essence of Vedic literature and is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So then we can try and absorb this knowledge and understand, okay, so I'm here in this material world, I have this material body, I have these questions, why am I here, what's the purpose of life, who am I? So how can I understand these topics? So then the first thing that we've all heard many times is that we're not this body. So this understanding that we're not the body, it seems to be very simple, but actually, if we can understand we're not the body, then we're completely free of all material desires. Akama, savakama, vamokshakama, dharati. That whatever desires we have in this material world, they can be filled by the Supreme Lord. But if we're free from material desires, then just like here in this verse, the first verse, text 1, it's described that anyone who offers a flower to Lord Chaitanya, then he's completely freed and can become a devotee. So in the translation, Prabhupada says one thing, but in the word for word, it's a description that whether you're full of desires or whether you're ardent materialist, Prabhupada translates it in the translation, but whether you're full of material desires, then by worshipping the Supreme Lord, you can become free. So this understanding we're not the body is, although it's considered to be the first point in spiritual life, is actually quite advanced because, as we know, there's different stages in devotional service. Sadhusanga, Adhoshraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajanakriya, Anatha Nivritti, Nishta, Ashakti, Ruchi, yeah, then Ashakti, then Bhava, then Prema. So there's these different stages. So if we're on this, if we're free from the bodily concept of life, then we're immediately free from Anatha Nivritti. We're completely situated in Nishta, in steadiness in a devotional service. So I don't know if anyone here feels they're fully situated on a platform free from any material desires, from wanting any nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, wanting any attractive ladies or attractive men for the ladies, or money or followers. If we're completely free from these desires, then we're actually free from the bodily concept of life. We've understood we're not the body. So this path that we're on of devotional service is actually, Prabhupada describes in the second verse of Bhagavatam in the purport, that this process is very simple. We chant Hare Krishna, we get up in the morning, we chant Hare Krishna, we go to Mangalarti, we go Guru Puja, we go to class, and then everything is automatically revealed to us. But then he says, the next word he says is, but the process of doing that is very difficult. It's in the ninth paragraph of the second chapter, second verse of Bhagavatam. So how come it's so difficult? The process is so easy. So why do we see, like I was here in the early 80s, and I don't see any faces that are here in the early 80s. Not one in the class. So so many devotees leave. So how is, if it's so simple, why do so many devotees disappear, or go somewhere else? Or, you know, they say after Vaidhi Bhakti there's, what's the word? Bhava Bhakti, but also Raganuga Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service. So what does Prabhupada say? The first thing he says about spontaneous devotional service. He says, the person in spontaneous devotional service, does anyone know this quote? It's quite an interesting quote. First thing Prabhupada says about Raganuga Bhakti, he says, the Raganuga Bhakti, he goes to Mangalati every morning because he wants to. So developing this taste for Krishna consciousness, developing this love, this bhava, this prema, this ashakti, is actually a difficult thing. If it was an easy thing, then we'd all be here in ecstasy, looking for some, please Prabhu, just give me some service, you know, anything, just let me, can I clean the floor, can I? You should be looking at me, I'm not just joking. Give me some service to do because I'm in so much ecstasy. I want to do something for Krishna. So why doesn't this appear within our hearts and minds? Because it's actually difficult. One time, one devotee was giving a talk on Sankirtan in Hungary, and he said, "Okay, everyone, put your hand up if you like to go out on Sankirtan and distribute books." And this was like in maybe the late 80s. So all the devotees put up their hand, and the devotee said, "You're liars." And they went, no, and you could see they were terrified in their eyes, because it's actually difficult. We talk about, for instance, book distribution as a service, a devotional service, and we say, oh, it's so much nectar, it's so wonderful. And of course, anyone that's been out in books has and experienced that nectar and that enjoyment. And in any devotional service, whether it's clean the pots, clean the floor, being a pujari, cooking for Krishna, talking about Krishna, it's all very ecstatic, but at the same time, anyone been on book distribution for a length of period will know it's like torture, isn't it? Anyone experienced torture when they've been on book distribution? Yeah, me. Two hands. So it's actually very difficult. So it's a chincha beta beta tattva. It's actually, on one hand, it's ecstatic. It is, and everyone's experienced that. It's been out, at least, I think nearly everyone. And on the other hand, it's actually very difficult. So how is this contradiction? It's a complete paradox. It's completely contradictory. So how is that possible? Because our philosophy is a chincha beta beta tattva. This is actually very difficult. So we know it's the right thing to do. We know it's good to do. We know there's a taste in doing it. But actually the process is difficult. So here we see Lord Chaitanya is saying, even an ardent materialist, if they offer me a flower, then they are completely purified and free from all material contamination. But at the same time, it's actually very difficult. So when we generally introduce people to Krishna consciousness, we're very keen to tell them how easy it is. Oh, just chant Hare Krishna, come and see the beautiful Lord, chant Hare Krishna, beautiful melodic? That's not a word, is it? Melodious, thank you. Melodic, melodious songs. And we hear, you know, we see some of the Gurukul kids playing harmonium and mridanga, and it's just like heavenly. It's just, we were in a temple just recently, Radhadesh, and the Gurukul kids, well, not the Gurukul kids, so there's a devotee there that runs a guest house. He was born in the movement, and there was a group of three or four of them, and there was one devotee giving mridanga lessons named Krishnadas. There was a group of learning kirtan. So every evening they came, and we were like the big brother and big sisters, all the mums and dads sitting at the back, because they have chairs at the back for the older people. And we were watching, and we're just listening to their kirtan, and it was just absolutely beautiful, stunningly beautiful. And of course, not just melodious, but actually there's some devotion and some love there. So we can preach to people and say, yeah, this is very beautiful. We just have beautiful music. We have beautiful deities. We have a beautiful philosophy. Everything is beautiful in Krishna consciousness. Simply chant and be happy. And just by chanting, automatically everything will be wonderful. Automatically, automatically, automatically. So that's, we preach that, and that's true. But then, Achinchya Beda Beda Tattva, on the other hand, it's not true. It's actually very difficult. So the word automatic is interesting. If you look it up in the dictionary, it has two connotations, two definitions. One is spontaneous, which is the one we like to use. And the other definition is unconscious. So it's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So that's, we can't be unconscious in our Krishna consciousness. And as everyone probably knows, Prabhupada said, but first we have to be conscious, and then we can be Krishna conscious. So automatic doesn't mean unconscious. It doesn't mean, we chant Hare Krishna, and then we're just unconscious of the philosophy. We're unconscious of our material attachments. We're unconscious of what we're doing. Automatically, everything's going to happen. It's not going to happen. In fact, we can chant Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we can chant for millions of lifetimes, and we're not going to get anywhere if we don't chant with some, at least a little bit of Namabhas every now and then. So it's not automatic if we're unconscious. But it is automatic if we're conscious and spontaneous and understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Just like devotees probably experience if they've been on the street distributing books, that every now and then nothing happens. And devotee's nodding there, honest devotee. And then everyone just walks past. So what do you do in that situation? Practically, on the street when there's nothing happening. So we have basically have two choices. We have many choices. We go and decide that, yeah, okay, that's it for the day. Or we decide that the other side of the road's better, or to change towns, or to get out the rain, or something. We change the external situation. Or we decide we'll eat something. There was one devotee, Australian devotee, back in the day, and he used to go to Holland and Barrett, and he used to buy all the fancy boga that we weren't allowed to buy, like Philadelphia cheese, marzipan. Jai Shri Radhika Kulananda Ki Jai. Maybe I shouldn't tell this story now the Lord's appeared. Sitaram Lakshmananaman Ki Jai, Gornitai Ki Jai. So, and he used to line up carob coated peanuts and raisins. And so he'd go off the street, and he'd set up this huge array of beautiful boga. And he used to say, please, Lord, accept this lovely offering of carob coated peanuts and marzipan and Philadelphia cheese. And very nice it is too. He used to say out loud. So you can take shelter of some nice foodstuffs, or we can go chant a bit, or eat some fruit, and then try again. There's many possibilities, but what generally devotees found the best method is actually if you just reboot the philosophy, read something, and understand why you're doing what you're doing. You know, we're in the material world, we're suffering, these people are suffering in the material world, and these books explain how to live in this material world, how to actually not just live in this material world, but get free of this material world and go back home, back to our original blissful state. So that when we reboot that philosophy in our head, and then we're going out not thinking, oh, this guy's well-dressed, he's got this lovely girlfriend, he's got these two beautiful kids, oh, and he looks so happy. It's really annoying. We think, oh, the person's suffering so much. You know, they don't realize they're going to get old, they're going to die, they're going to... There's one other story. One devotee was at Soho Street, and he was been asked by his authorities to go around the guests in the restaurant and try and cultivate them and make friends with them and bring them up to the temple and introduce them to some Krishna consciousness. So he was a new devotee, and he was from London. And he said, he went up to this man, he said, excuse me, sir, do you know you're suffering? And the man, he was quite an unusual devotee. And the man was very polite, well-dressed. He said, actually, I'm very happy. I've got a lovely wife, I've got two beautiful children, I've got a lovely job, and I'm having a beautiful meal. I mean, your restaurant's lovely. I couldn't be better. And the devotee looked at him and said, I'm sorry, I'm new at this. And walked off. So when we do have some difficulty, you know, like on the street or in any of devotional service, then all we can do really is take shelter of the philosophy. And then when the philosophy kicks in, then we again, it's like it said in the purport there, that once you know the grammatical rules of Sanskrit, then you understand Sanskrit. So we have to reboot our philosophical understanding whenever we become bewildered. So to be, you know, this sambandha abhideya prayojana, this sambandha has to be very clear, this understanding of our relationship with Krishna has to be very clear. And then when we're clear, we're happy, we're actually become blissful, because we're again established in our attitude of service to the Supreme Lord. So sometimes when we become bewildered, that's the nature of bewilderment, we don't know what to do. But actually, if we can reboot the philosophy in our intelligence, it's like coming across a material desire. If you have desire for sex life or money or followers, then again you have to go to the philosophy and say, I can't enjoy sex life eternally, I can't enjoy followers eternally, I can't enjoy money eternally. Just a little bit, just joking. We can't enjoy these things eternally, and we have to understand, I'm not going to be happy no matter how much money I have, no matter how much sex life I have, no matter how many followers I have. We look at these famous people in the material world, contemporary people, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. So they have everything. They're like the Beck and Posh of the world. And they've got all the money, they've got all the fame, they've got all the followers. And they have these followers on Facebook, is it? Twitter. And they have millions of followers. Obama had 6 million or something. Anyway, they have millions. But are they happy? So these things, this philosophy has to kick in and say, well, actually, they don't have happiness. They don't have... What's actually the happiness? Can anyone tell me here? What's the happiness? Any comments from the floor? Huh?
No suffering.
No suffering and happiness. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's all correct. But also, we come into this material world to try and control and enjoy. So we come in. I mean, when I first read the books, I don't know whether anyone had the same experience, when Prabhupada all the time was saying, servant of God, servant, 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 servant. It was like a little bit of a, well, for me anyway, it was a little bit of torture. Like, why is he going on about servant all the time? Servant, servant of God, God is God, God. All that is repeating himself all the time. Servant of God, servant. You had the same experience when you read the books. Like, all the time, it's the same thing over and over again. Because that's actually our conditioning, that we came into the material world. Actually, people blame God for everything. It's his fault, everyone's suffering, the kids are dying and people are starving. But we made the choice to come into this material world to enjoy, to try and enjoy at least, like Krishna. So this controlling propensity, this this controlling propensity is the cause of our suffering. This is the cause of our suffering. Not, the temple president, the GBC, my wife, the kids, this devotee, that devotee, this external reason isn't the cause of our suffering. The cause of our suffering is that we're not engaged in our blissful servitor propensity. So when we in it, Sukham Kartam Aviyam, this devotional service is joyfully performed. So if we're not joyful, then it's because we're not engaged in our natural position as a blissful servant of Krishna. So we can understand philosophically that that's the case. So it's a question of bringing the philosophy, the Sambandha, into the Abhideya and realizing, how do I go back into that servitor attitude? Manasa deho geho yoki tumo. Back to Notako saying, you know, my house is Vaikuntha, my wife and my kids are all servants of Krishna, I'm serving them, my whole house has become Vaikuntha. because of his service attitude. So developing this service attitude is actually the process of devotional service. And if we're not feeling blissful and we're not feeling happy in our devotional attempts, it's because we're not fixed on this attitude of being the servant, and we become the controller or the enjoyer of our activities. Just like we see on the street, the minute they're thinking, hey, the books are going out today. And then nothing. Nothing. Or you think, you know, we see from the example of the gopis and Krishna that when the minute the gopis say to Krishna, oh, I'm tired. Oh, Krishna, can I just jump on your back and you give me a piggyback? Then Krishna disappeared. So this is actually our philosophy. So when we become a little bit proud or a little bit controlling or a little bit envious, a little bit, you know, wanting money, women, followers, wanting anything material, then the bliss disappears. So sometimes the other extreme goes that, oh, Prabhu, you know, you say, for instance, you're being engaged in sort of pujari work, or you're getting up at 2 a.m. and you're doing some puja, and then you're going out full time on Sankirtan, and then you come back from Sankirtan, then you've got to put the deities to rest, and then after you put the deities to rest, you've got to cook the Mangaladi sweets the night before for the deities in the morning, and you're sleeping 1 hour a night. And some devotee's saying to you, Prabhu, you're chanting such good rounds, you're getting so much service. And you're thinking, I'm exhausted. And you do that for like 2 weeks, and you get to a point where you're having like a nervous breakdown because you're not sleeping enough. So there's a practical side as well. It's not that we're just, you know, engaged in our spiritual sanatan dharma and we don't have to look after a material body. We don't have to be emotionally balanced or mentally balanced or physically balanced. Yoga means to be balanced. So we have to make sure, like Prabhupada said, health first, service second, sadhana second, service third. We have to make sure our health is nice, our sadhana is good, and our service is there. So we have to be careful and monitor ourselves and try and help others so they are not being overstressed, overburdened, overworked. And also that, of course, the other side is not being too lazy. That story of the two lazy men in that kingdom. Everyone probably knows the story. The king invited all the lazy men to his newly built assembly hall, which was made of a flammable material. So thousands of people came, because he said, any lazy man can be fed, we'll feed every lazy man in the kingdom. So he made this huge feast. So many people came, and claiming, you know, I'm lazy. So they got their feast. So then he set fire to the whole assembly hall, and two people were left. And it's like a Vedic joke, but it's really not got a punchline, has it? But the two men are lying there, the whole thing's in flames, and one man turns to the other and says, it's getting very hot in here. And the other man replied, I'll just roll over. So the king said, this is the only two lazy men in my kingdom, everyone else is. So Prabhupada said, no lazies, no crazes, but also no fanatics, you know, that we're not engaging, like shooting stars, the example's given, and the full moons. You know, the shooting stars may be there. We've seen so many devotees come and do so much amazing service. I can think of one devotee actually in particular. To give an example, it was in Germany, and we visited late 80s, and there was one new bhakta there, and he was brand new bhakta, and he had these big black rings under his eyes, and he was chanting 84 rounds a day or something, doing service. And he was eating one Mangalarti sweet every morning, and that was it. He was really fired up. And the next time I went back, you'll never guess. He wasn't there. So we can't be extreme. Yoga means we have to... In fact, the mode of goodness means that it's a little bit difficult, or poison, Vishvam, it says in Bhagavad Gita. It's poison in the beginning, and it's nectar in the end. So austerity is needed. We need to perform activities like, you know, getting ourselves prepared the night before with our cloth and our tilak and our know everything is. And we have to set things up. We have to arrange things which create a disturbance, because the mode of goodness means you get organized. But then, of course, the pleasure comes. So the mode of goodness, symptom of the mode of goodness, one of the symptoms of the mode of goodness, is it brings happiness. But there's a little austerity needed in the beginning. And just like anything in life, like when Prabhupada spoke to George Harrison and the Beatles, John Lennon, one of the first things he said was, you know, you musicians, you needed to perform austerity. You needed to learn how to use the instrument. So you need to perform austerity in order to gain anything in this world. To pass an exam, you need to revise. To get prema, to get love of God, means we have to perform austerities. We have to engage our mind and heart in Krishna's activities and Krishna's service, and really understand this philosophy that we're the servant of Krishna. We come into the material world because we wanted to enjoy, we wanted to control. And this tendency is in me. This is actually where I'm at. I want to control and enjoy. So this is what's blocking my blissful existence. And if I can get free of this propensity, then I can be blissful and be happy in my devotional service. So I'm not sure of the timings of everything, Prabhu, but can we take questions now? Go till 9. Okay. Yeah, if any questions, if anyone got, or comments or corrections,